Case number 21-1140, Chevron USA, Inc., petitioner versus Environmental Protection Agency. Ms. Stetson for the petitioner, Mr. Dupree for the respondent.
Good morning, counsel. Ms. Stetson, please proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, your honors, and may it please the court. My name is Kate Stetson. I represent the petitioner Chevron in this case. The merits question in this case is whether an oil platform on the Outer Continental Shelf, OCS, that no longer emits and can no longer emit air pollutants, nevertheless remains an OCS source as the Clean Air Act defines it. Now, EPA has answered that question twice, and both times has answered it differently. In January of last year, EPA told Chevron that two offshore platforms that were being decommissioned would not qualify as OCS sources at the point where those platforms and the equipment that used to be on them can no longer emit any air pollutants. That meant that once that critical predicate was satisfied, the platforms and the equipment can no longer emit air pollutants, Chevron could, at that point, surrender its Title V stationary source air permit and continue decommissioning, subject, of course, to all of the other regulatory schemes that attach to decommissioning. But then in April of last year, EPA changed its mind. Its new interpretation is that even if a platform can no longer emit pollutants, other equipment or facilities brought to the site or new activities conducted at that site could nevertheless constitute an OCS source. So EPA instructed Chevron to provide what it called detailed information to the Ventura County Air District, describing its decommissioning processes so that the Ventura District could decide in the first instance, under the Clean Air Act, when an OCS source stops being an OCS source. That was not a directive that Chevron could refuse. It can either continue decommissioning past the point of the platforms emitting air pollutants and suffer potentially financial or other enforcement consequences, or it can continue a 12 to 18 month process of discussing with Ventura County whether it even needs a permit at all.
Ms. Stetson, during the pre-abandonment and abandonment phases, what were the emissions from productive activities that continued to qualify the platforms as OCS sources up to the end of those phases?
The submission in the joint appendix from the BOEM is helpful on this. If you look at around pages 61 to 62, the BOEM discusses in detail the various processes that joint appendix 61 and 62, the various processes that the decommissioning phases go through. At the point where we are in the pre-abandonment or abandonment phase, my understanding from that and from that submission is that the generators that are located on the platforms are still in use, that there is emitting equipment still in use. And as for that equipment, I'd make one side note, which is, you see in Joint Appendix 113, the footnote 2, I think, that you can find the permits that we're talking about, the air permits, online, both for Grace and Gale. And one of the useful things there, I think, is if you look at Table 2 of that online permit, you can see every bit of the equipment that we're talking about that's on the platform. So, Judge Pillard, at the point where you're just in that initial abandonment and pre-abandonment phase, I think Chevron's position was there are still activities that are taking place on the platform and equipment that is being used on the platform that's going to result in emissions.
So how do we know, for example, at JA86, there's a table showing decommissioning equipment requirements, and it shows generators, which I think is what you just mentioned during the pre-abandonment phase. The generators are also used during topside removal and jacket removal. And how do we know that those are generators that aren't on the platform and that they're somehow statutorily distinct from the generators you're talking about?
One is factual and then one is more kind of consequential. The factual answer is if you look at the top of Joint Appendix 77, the barges, the derrick barges that EPA talks about a great deal in its brief, themselves have generators on. So if you look at the top of 77, you'll see that the bargers have generators. Our understanding is that that's the generators that they're talking about at those later phases in the process. The consequence point I'd want to make is this was a very clean line that the Chevron letter asked about and that the EPA January response drew. If there still is equipment that is emitting on the platform and Chevron is not operating under a Title V permit, Chevron is in deep trouble. So at the point where Chevron asked, can we at this point surrender our Title V permit, it is, according to Chevron's own representations, the point at which there is no longer equipment on the platform that's emitting. And EPA actually doesn't really push up against this at all. You'll notice Joint Appendix 128, and then in its brief at 28 and also at 5, I think, EPA accepts or acknowledges that what we're talking about is the circumstances where the platform and the equipment on the platform have been dismantled and decommissioned such that there's no more emissions from the platform. EPA's argument here is, you can see this at 128, there could be things that are brought to the site, and by the way, site is not the, but brought to the site, or equipment or facilities at the site that nevertheless can qualify as OCS sources. I want to be clear on two things. The first is an OCS source has to be something. And what we know is it can't be a boat. It can't be a vessel. No matter how large the vessel is, a derrick barge is still a boat. And EPA concedes that that's not an OCS source unless, of course, it's attached to the bottom of the ocean, at which point it becomes its own OCS source, regulated by Title V, subject to that permit holder's restrictions.
When you say that permit holder, so that would not be Chevron. If a derrick barge is brought to the site and, well, I guess under the easier case for you, attached to the seabed, and if it is considered, just for purposes of my question, to be equipment rather than a vessel, I gather there are tugs that have to maneuver them. And so if one were to consider them equipment, then that would be, there might be a permitting requirement, but it's your position that that would not be Chevron's responsibility.
Position that the owner or operator of the barge would have to get a permit. And in any event, it wouldn't be this permit pertaining to the Grace and Gale platforms. And these are the two permits that are at issue here, the permits that pertain to the platforms. We say in our briefing that to the extent that there are other Title V permits that are necessary if a barge attaches itself to the seabed, that is a separate permit and a separate discussion.
And is that just generally the case with decommissioning, that when equipment is brought in to hasten the decommissioning process, that usually that's somebody else's permit, just as a practical matter?
I can't represent that that's in the record, Judge Srinivasan, but yep. My observation here is that these are not the permits where we're talking
right,
about.
Right, so I get the point that they're not the Grace and the other permit
exactly.
Or Chevron, but just in terms of whether Chevron versus somebody else as a practical matter, do you?
Whether it's Chevron or somebody else as a practical matter, my understanding is that the owner or operator is the one that needs to hold the permit, and these derrick barges, as like EPA says, BOEM says, they are few and far between and often come from far away. So those owners and operators, to my understanding, are not likely to be
Chevron
different. So, yes.
The question Ms. Stetson, assume you're right that the April letter is a change. I'm not sure that's right, but let's just assume it is. What's your response to EPA's argument that, look, the permitting, this isn't final because the permitting authority is Ventura County. It was the permitting authority before the January letter, it's still the permitting authority. Your client's permits continue through the end of this year and into next year. And whatever we've said, you've got to go to Ventura County to change or abandon your permit. And if you're unhappy with Ventura County's handling of that, you can come back to EPA for final resolution and then appeal that. Is that wrong?
Yes.
Tell me why.
I think for two reasons. The first is that the legal question here is not whether Chevron is entitled to a permit, which would be Ventura County's bid. The question here is whether Chevron needs to get a permit at all for this activity. And that's an interpretive question that falls to EPA under the Clean Air Act. With response to your observation that there's still more work to be done, according to EPA, in Ventura County, I'd point you to the Hawks case from the Supreme Court. The Hawks case says, and I'll quote now, the remedy for denial of action that might be sought from one agency does not ordinarily provide an adequate remedy for for action already taken by another agency. So our point here is similar to Hawks, similar to Sackett, in fact, that at the point where EPA said in January, you no longer, Chevron, you no longer need to hold this particular permit after your platform stopped emitting, that is essentially a safe harbor. That's the safe harbor that was created by the letter and then taken away in April.
Ms. Stetson, the approved jurisdictional determination in Hawks very much more formal than these letters. I mean, they're looking at an actual piece of land and making it as applied determination based on facts. One of the difficulties here with your finality argument is it would seem that both letters were made based on a series of assumptions that Chevron communicated, and that the EPA's position is, yeah, on those facts, if that turns out to be the case, here's our answer. But how could Ventura County or EPA or this court make a merits determination without knowing whether that's in fact the case?
I think that, as you said, Judge Pillard, both sides here and below are assuming that those are the factual predicates. Just like you would come into an agency with any other permit applicability determination and say, on these facts, do I need to go and ask that other entity for a permit? So the facts that were represented by Chevron to EPA, which EPA accepted, it still accepts here, is that platforms no longer emit. And as I said earlier, if Chevron gets those facts wrong, Chevron is subject to enforcement actions and fines. So everyone understands that that predicate set of facts is that kind of cleanly drawn set of facts that we're talking about. And even when EPA talks about this, EPA doesn't talk about the possibility that a platform that can't still emit could, as a platform, still emit. It makes the point that I made earlier, which is EPA's current position is there might be things that are brought to the site or activities that are taking place later in the decommissioning process that create emissions. But when you dig down into that brief, what you'll see is that what EPA talks about is the derrick and the things that go on the derrick, which, of course, as the agency has consistently conceded, both in January and April and its brief, those are vessels. Those are not subject to
No, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, please.
I just want to follow up on my question. Maybe I'm missing something here, but I still don't understand your answer to my question. EPA has delegated its permitting authority to Ventura County, right?
It has delegated the authority to interpret, to enforce and implement, but not to interpret. I think that's the line that we're
And where do you find that?
We can find that in the delegation document itself.
Uh-huh. Which, what precisely are you focusing on?
I think it's at addendum 3 of the EPA's submission in its brief. The delegation document is attached as an So the point here that with respect to finality, we can talk about the delegation issue separately, but with respect to finality, I think the question reduces down to those Bennett versus Speer questions, which is, was this a final decision? Was this a decision, I should say, the consummation of an agency action? And does it have direct practical consequences for Chevron? The answer from EPA's perspective is clearly yes on both of those things. EPA hasn't, as in some other non-final cases, hedged its bets, explained that it's simply a recommendation, explained that there's no consequence that follows from this.
How is that different from California communities where we said that under Bennett too, it wasn't final? It seems very similar.
California communities, I think, is not similar because that was a case where there was a memo that was issued that it itself offered a definitive interpretation of the Clean Air Act. So step one of the Bennett analysis was satisfied. What it didn't do, because it was just a memo to regional administrators saying, here's how I interpret the Clean Air Act, what it didn't do is have any practical consequences on any regulated party up to the point where that party went to the regional administrator, sought a permit, and was denied or was conditioned on that basis. So here what we're talking about is a definitive interpretation of the Clean Air Act that says even if a platform that is a stationary source no longer emits as a stationary source, it can still be treated as one under the Clean Air Act. And if you disagree, you should go and make sure that you don't need a permit from Ventura County. That imposes significant obligations on Chevron
So is it Chevron's position that it would not have needed to go to Ventura County at all, A, either to surrender or terminate the permits it already had, or B, to get a final permitting determination, even under the January letter? So under the January letter, Chevron wouldn't have had to go to Ventura and say, look, we're off the hook?
So my red light is on. But I hope
keep
I
going. We're fine with that. If the chief is okay with it.
Of course.
Chevron's position is that under the January letter, once it reached that point in the decommissioning process, and I keep emphasizing that, where the platforms no longer emit, then it could surrender its current Title V stationary source permit. One of them, I think, expires at the end of this year, one early next year. It surrenders that permit, and it need not go through any additional permitting process. That, of course, is not Ventura County's position in its estimation, nor is it EPA's current position. But as of January, Chevron's and EPA's position was that once Chevron reached that point, it could surrender its Title V permit. At that point, I should add, and I mentioned this earlier, there are all sorts of other regulations that specifically cover decommission that are administered by the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement, BSEE, you'll see that mentioned in the briefing, or BOEM, as I mentioned, including NEPA, including decommissioning regulations administered by BSEE that are found in a different part of the CFR.
Can I ask a question about venue? I mean, you've been gone for more than 15 minutes in Washington, D.C., and I guess there's a question of whether you should be doing this in San Francisco or Pasadena. And on that, I have a threshold question, which is just assume for purposes of argument, you'll resist it, but assume for purposes of argument that I do think that venue belongs in the Ninth Circuit rather than here. My first question is, can we reach that conclusion without addressing the one that you've been addressing for the last few minutes, finality?
The answer, I will resist it, but the answer to your question is yes, you can reach that conclusion without addressing finality. That's happened before in clean air cases where this court has transferred. I think there was a case where it transferred to the Tenth Circuit, and it said, as between these two doctrines, we don't assume any jurisdiction conferring power simply by saying we're going to transfer.
And we don't even have to transfer here, as I understand it, right? I mean, we wouldn't even have to invoke.
Correct.
It because you've got
a protective.
We could just dismiss.
Yes.
On basis of venue. And then, so we wouldn't even have to assert the court.
You don't even have to assert that authority. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Okay.
But you need not go through those steps. But as to venue, if I could.
Right. So on the resistance question, whether that you resist the premise. So if am I understanding the venue statute correctly to say it's an either or proposition? It's either that it comes here or it goes to the Ninth Circuit. We're not talking about whether there's the authority to go here in addition to going to the Ninth Circuit.
That's correct. It is an unusual either or proposition.
And so that informs it in my mind, because then the question isn't just, is there a national aspect of the decision that would make it appropriate to bring it here in addition, notwithstanding that there's local aspects to the decision that would make it appropriate to bring it to the Ninth Circuit. It's a Boolean variable. It either belongs here or it belongs in the Ninth Circuit. And on that, there's even if you're right that there's parts of the decisional documents, I don't want to call them decisional documents. There's parts of the documents that have implications for issues that could rise elsewhere, because of the interpretation of the statutes that embedded in the letters. There's also aspects of them that are tethered to the particular circumstances in question with respect to these two platforms. And so if it's an either or proposition, the fact that there's a lot of local stuff going on in the letters and they have a lot of language to the effect of, you'd have to look at particular circumstances that are on the ground here, that tends to shift in my mind the balance, and it pushes it towards the West Coast.
I think the answer to your question has to do with the particular circumstances that we're talking about. Now, I will concede, as we have to, that there's language in there that says, on these facts that we've been talking about, that Chevron has presented to us, an OCS source is no longer an OCS source at the point where that source stops emitting. But the difference, I think, between that kind of packaging, on these facts that this regulated entity has brought us, and the packaging that you see in the cases that are quintessentially regional, so the renewable identification number case where there was an action specific, this was producers of renewables case, actions specific to three Wyoming facilities.
Well, what about Sierra Club?
I'm sorry?
What about Sierra Club?
Sierra Club, I think, was an action specific to a Utah plant.
Correct, but yes, but in resolving it, the EPA used what the court called a novel approach to the statute.
Yes, I think I didn't hear the last, but I'll not.
Sorry, a novel rule. And we still said that belonged in the regional circuit. It looks a lot like this case. I read your brief pretty carefully on your effort to distinguish it, and I just didn't get the distinction. It looked to me just like this case.
I think on a superficial read, it does look a lot like this case. I think the difference has to do both with...
I promise not to read these things superficially.
On initial read, it looks a lot like this case. The difference, I think, has to do both with the...
I read it twice.
The difference has to do both with the posture of this case. This is a letter that created a safe harbor. If these facts are met, a platform isn't an OCF source. And the issue in Sierra Club, Judge Tatel, which was this permit that I just granted, I'm going to deny the objection to, because on these facts, I'm expressly confining, is what he said, my interpretation to the specific circumstances of this plant. And I'm not considering at this time, he said, whether other circumstances may warrant a different approach. That kind of packaging, I think, makes this different, because here, the point that we have been making is that once that factual predicate in Chevron's letter is met, there's no unique aspect of the Grace platform or the Gale platform.
I think you've created a problem for your argument by the way you just stated it, because you described it as a fact unique to Chevron's platforms, which you believe could apply nationally. And even if you're right about that, the statute provides just for that circumstance. It says that in a situation where the agency applies a nationally applicable rule to a local situation, for it to come in this circuit, the administrator has to certify that, right? I mean, the statute expressly provides for the situation you just described.
I don't think it does, Judge Tatel, for this reason. I think what I just heard you say was that I had described this as a set of facts unique to Gale and Grace platforms.
Right.
And if I did say that, then I quite misspoke. Uh-huh. Because what I meant to say was that these are facts that the Gale and Grace platforms are currently in the process of arriving at, but they are not unique to those platforms alone. There is nothing unique about the point that any offshore platform regulated under this statute mm-hmm. reaches when it reaches the pre-abandonment and abandonment phase.
It at least
no longer emit. That's the difference.
It at least feels a lot different than if it's an either-or proposition. It's not your quintessential national rule where, and I know the statute has different categories and regulations, one of them, but that's kind of the heartland of something that exclusively comes to the D.C. Circuit as opposed to somewhere else where it's a rule of nationwide effect on its terms. It's not even purporting to apply to a particular locality. And here it just seems to me the question is we have to look at these letters and the April letter in particular and ask, is this a national letter or is it a local letter? It's an either or proposition.
So I think if you look at the entire spectrum, you have a national rule on one side. You have what this court has called the prototypical regional rule on the other side, which is a SIP, state implementation plan. And then you have, of course, this vast middle. And I think the question in that middle is, what does the agency decision, and of course, it doesn't have to be contained in a rule. This court has said in CSI and in others that it can be contained in a letter, mm-hmm. including a letter to and from a regulated entity. What does that rule say? And is it particular to the unique facts of those circumstances? Is it particular to the Wyoming facilities? Is it particular to the Utah plant? And does the administrator say, on these unique circumstances, I'm going to grant this permit, I'm going to deny an objection to the permit? That's very different than saying, where you have a platform that no longer emits, it is no longer an OCS source. Now, the fact that that came as a response to a letter saying, we have these two platforms that are soon going to reach this stage, that doesn't make it regionally applicable. the way that the administrator went about deciding that question, both in January and in April, which is why it posted this April letter on its national website, makes it nationally applicable. If Chevron has a platform subject to the Clean Air Act in a different part of the ocean, this is going to apply to that as well. And so would the January.
So I had a second part of, I just wanted to circle back because I had a second procedural question. I think you answered the first one about whether Chevron would have had to go to Ventura to surrender its existing permit. And I thought you said no. But I also had asked, and this really goes to what's Chevron's injury under the April letter, even under the January letter, because it sets out a series of hypothetical facts, and even assuming that what Chevron told EPA was accurate and complete, under the delegation agreement, Ventura is the agency that deals with permitting in the first instance. So wouldn't Chevron, even under the January letter, have gone to Ventura for final permit determination? Are you saying no, that had the April letter not come along, that Chevron's plan was never to go to Ventura County about the decommissioning activities that were coming up?
Chevron's plan, so I think this bears on the question that Judge Tatel asked earlier as well. Chevron's plan after the January letter was that once Chevron reached that point in the process where the platforms no longer emit, that it would surrender its Article 5 permit, which meant, as Chevron says in its letter, Joint Appendix 113, it could no longer practically or legally emit air pollutants from the site. So at that
point, practically would be your, as you've emphasized, would be your problem, because if you could practically, you would be in violation of the act.
If you could,
assuming that you legally couldn't, I mean, you wouldn't have gone to Ventura armed with this very helpful January letter and said, of course, we don't need a permit.
I say no, because we would not have needed to. The distinction, I think, is between, I think the way I tried to phrase it earlier was, do we need a permit for this at all? Are we covered under this definition of the Clean Air Act at all? EPA, what is your interpretation of the Clean Air Act, and does it apply to a non-emitting stationary source?
So in the answer, finish your answer.
So if the different question is, have we satisfied Ventura's requirements for a permit, then of course we would have to go to Ventura County. But the reason that we went to EPA in the first instance is because there's a predicate legal question that we thought needed to be asked of EPA and answered by EPA, which is, do we need this permit at all? That I think is the legal difference and the difference in authority between EPA's interpretive power, which it cannot delegate, and Ventura County's implementing.
So it's your position that there just aren't any borderline cases. You mentioned under the statute that a vessel could be its own OCS source if it's tethered to the seabed and exploring, developing, or producing resources. But there's also the second provision under the regulation that says a vessel can be included in the definition of an OCS source if it's physically attached to an OCS facility. It doesn't say an OCS source, it says an OCS facility. And so if the derrick barge were attached to, and if one thought that this was a vessel but also could become equipment, and it would be attached to the platform, and then that would be a stationary source, isn't there some unclarity potentially in whether that would be emissions of the platform or emissions only of the derrick barge that would be the problem of the owner of the derrick barge?
I think even in that formulation, Judge Pillard, what you would still need to find is something that's regulated under the OCS and regulated by OCSLA, the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act. OCSLA, if you look at it, 43 U.S.C. 1333, OCSLA regulates, and I'm going to quote, installations and other devices permanently or temporarily attached to the seabed, or, which is a turbine, a platform, or any such installation or other device, other than a ship or vessel, for the purpose of transporting such resources, so pipeline. So at the point where you no longer have a platform, when you no longer have anything except metal and concrete on that oil platform, that is not an OCS source or anything that emissions can be ascribed to some other vessel.
And but if the generator were plunked on there during decommissioning, that would be an OCS source by the same token that pre-abandonment and abandonment having the generators on the platform. The platform is still emitting. And I guess I'm just, I mean, this is, goes really to the finality question and whether this is a more hypothetical general determination or really a determination of, you know, that's final on these facts. And my sort of basic understanding is that the final determination would have to be made by Ventura County and not disapproved by EPA on a more detailed record of what the plans are. And you're saying no. And because this is, you emphasize yourselves that this is sort of a novel issue of first impression, it seems surprising to me that Chevron is so confident that there's a clear line when I read these materials and I think, eh.
Let me answer that a couple different ways. The first is that the reason that there is a clear line is because we drew a clear line. Because we drew a clear line.
Oh.
I'm sorry. The predicate that we've been talking about is these platforms can no longer emit. That is the clear line. And as I said earlier, EPA accepts that line. It isn't offering, either below or in its brief, and you can see that again at pages 5 and 28, that the platform still hypothetically potentially could emit because there might be emitting equipment on it. What EPA says is there could be other stuff brought to the site, which EPA has backed away from in this brief, but that was its point below, or other activities that themselves could be OCS sources. But let me also make a point, I think, Judge Pillard, that's important to make in response to your question about not going to Ventura County or not being regulated under Title V. This is not the Wild West if Title V or the stationary source requirements don't apply. This is a highly regulated West. There are decommissioning requirements that are in, and I'll cite you a couple CFR sites, 30 CFR 250.1700 to 1754, all of which go into detail about what applications an owner or someone responsible for a platform needs to submit in order to decommission. Everything down to essentially the type of equipment that's going to be used to make sure that the shell base underneath the platform returns to its prior state. Those regulations go on for pages and pages and pages. So when you ask the question, Judge Gillard, about not presenting our decommissioning plan to Ventura County, Chevron has already presented its decommissioning plans and is giving every 6-month updates to BSEE under the exact regulations that pertain to decommissioning. So this is more a turf question than a regulation. The decommissioning process is regulated quite extensively and stringently by another federal component. It's just not regulated, we would say, at the point where the platforms cease emitting under the Clean Air Act by Ventura County at that. So that's why the county's role, we think, is so limited. And that's why we thought it was important to go to EPA in that first instance for that predicate question and to ask the question whether the permits at all.
There's a lot in the Boehm report about clean air, though, about how these, you know, whether it's the clamshells or the derrick barges or the cargo barges, that if the tugs are using, you know, cleaner fuels, if they're tier four, you know, that there could be very large emissions during the decommissioning process, or the emissions could be really quite modest, depending on how careful the process, you know, carefully the process is conducted. And your view is fine and dandy. None of that is our problem. That is the problem of the owners of the vessels and the equipment that the tugs are pushing around.
I wouldn't go so far as to say none of that is our problem. I don't think we need to make that argument. I think our argument would be all of that discussion of air emissions pertains to mobile source emissions that are regulated.
But isn't the consequence of that, that's not our problem?
Depending on things that neither of us know, the indemnity contracts between us and the barges or what have you, that could or could not be Chevron's problem. The point is, it's not Ventura County's problem because it is a mobile source regulated by the mobile source requirements. And the other thing I would add too is, you'll see this at Joint Appendix 116, I think note 8, NEPA applies to decommissioning. And there is actually a memorandum of agreement between BOEM and BSEE about who administers the NEPA process, who gets to pull together all of the information, including air information, that's necessary to make a NEPA determination that a decommissioning process should go forward. So again, there are multiple layers of federal regulation and oversight. The only question in this case, and what it reduces down to, is does the stationary source requirements of the OCS, which require emissions from an installation regulated by OXLA on the Outer Continental Shelf, does that particular set of regulations apply when the platform no longer emits? And I think once you reduce EPA's brief down to its arguments, EPA's argument is, you know, but the derrick barges. The derrick barges are regulated as mobile sources, and EPA has not been able to identify anything in between the platform and the barges and all of the equipment that go into those vessels as performing some other OCS facility source that could satisfy that requirement.
Why don't we hear from EPA on its argument, unless my colleagues have further questions for you at this point. We'll give you some time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Stetson. Mr. Dupree. Can you raise up the podium on the mics? Yeah, one of them's going to work, I think, probably. That should work.
May it please the court, Philip Dupree with the Department of Justice on behalf of EPA. With me at council table is Brian Doster of the EPA. I want to start by stating very clearly, we do not agree with the facts and hypothetical that Chevron put in their September. And that is, in fact, why in April, the agency said, we need more details about the factual predicate before we can make a legal determination. You know, I think that is a key distinction here where, and again, this is specifically set forth in the April letter, that the agency believes more details are needed to accurately and appropriately apply to the law to the facts presented. And EPA's decision to not accept the hypothetical that Chevron put before it does not mean that it's made a final determination under Bennett versus Sphere. As we set forth in the brief, EPA has not consummated its decision-making process on Chevron's decommissioning plan. In part, and as Chevron noted in their letter to EPA, they still had not finalized their decommissioning. And the proper way for them to put those plans forward is through the permitting agency, which is Ventura County.
And could you just describe the scope of Ventura County's authority under the delegation agreement?
So they are authorized to implement and enforce this provision of the Clean Air Act. And what that means is they issue the permits to the Gale and Grace platform. They oversee those permits and enforce those permits according to their state laws and regulations that EPA approved.
And does Chevron have to come back to have to go to Ventura to abandon its current permit?
I do not know.
You don't know?
But I think the key point here is that under that one and I want to clarify this is I think Chevron misreads the guidance that Ventura County has put out about their permitting obligations during the decommissioning. And this was set forth in both the January and April letters, but Ventura County has its own air regulations. And for offshore platforms within 3 miles of Ventura County, that's state law, and that's pure state law. And what the OCS provisions of the Clean Air Act say is for those federally regulated facilities within 25 miles, such as the Gale and Grace platforms, we are going to delegate that OCS authority to Ventura County to apply their state laws and regulations. So all Ventura County said is if you are subject to our state regulations, then you are required to maintain your permit through decommission. They didn't answer the predicate question, which is Chevron's point here, whether or not they will maintain to be an OCS facility resource at some hypothetical point. Judge Ballard, I see you.
I thought the Ventura County rules were a verbatim incorporation of the Part 55 federal.
Yes, those are the rules. Yes, correct, Your Honor. Those are the rules that were adopted. I'm sorry, I'm referring to, there is a question and answer document on Ventura County's website that Chevron cites to for their 12 to 18 month permitting process discussion argument. And our point is merely that that question and answer document relates to if a facility is regulated by the state, not whether or not an OCS facility can use to be regulated by the state at the process that is at issue.
Can I ask you, because I think it relates to how we think about finality, whether the EPA has any interpretation of Section 55.2 that would give it ability to regulate Chevron or require Chevron to have a permit, whether it's based on vessels or equipment, or like, can you describe the factual situation that concerns EPA that it suspects could arise during decommissioning after the pre-abandonment and abandonment phases that EPA thinks could be covered, and therefore that gives some, you know, meat to the need to go to Ventura County?
Absolutely. But before I get to these sort of hypotheticals, I think it's important to understand what EPA was rejecting is, without knowing all the different ways that decommissioning can play out as a matter of fact, what are the different combinations of barges and generators at different points of the decommissioning process? It was not appropriate for them to give essentially this blanket firm line in the sand of when OCS obligations no longer. But to try to get more into the various hypotheticals.
But from Chevron's point of view, that's a dramatic change, isn't it? Why isn't Chevron right about that?
But it's
under the January letter, all they had to do was meet that condition. Now they have a much heavier burden. That's their argument as to why this is
certainly
legal consequences.
Certainly, they like the legal interpretation set forth in the January. But I think the important thing is that twofold. One is that it's not clear to me, and as we explained in the brief, that the January letter actually altered any of their legal obligations. But secondly, the April letter made clear that EPA's has not consummated its decision-making process as to what may be required here. And to go back to Judge Billard's hypotheticals, I want to make very clear, first off, that at issue here is emissions from the stationary aspects of this. While it is correct that Interior and other agencies help regulate decommissioning, they do not regulate air emissions from those processes.
For example, when you say stationary aspects of vessels,
yes,
are you talking about the provision that I was questioning Ms. Stetson about, under which a vessel could be attached to the platform?
Yes.
So it's 55.2.
Under the
source definition.
So, for instance, you know, a derrick barge is a portable city block with a crane on it. And the issue of emissions is primarily the various generators and the power sources needed to basically run a crane to dismantle an offshore oil platform. It is not an issue of what emissions are needed to move the barge around. And so here to your point, Your Honor, I think there are lots of questions of if, for instance, a derrick barge attaches itself to a offshore platform, and then those generators on the platform are transferred to the derrick barge that is attached to the platform and used to further dismantle the offshore platform, are those generators no longer regulated under the Clean Air Act merely because they've been transferred from the platform to the vessel attached to the platform.
Oh, I thought you said the opposite, that they were transferred from the barge to the platform, but you mean the other way around?
The other way around.
Okay, so your position is that under the definition of OCS stores in 55.2, under 3(2), a vessel that is physically attached to the OCS facility could be deemed to be part of the platform and not, as Ms. Stetson was saying, its own separate OCS source, such that the owner of the derrick barge would be the one that had to get a permit.
I think what, to be clear, EPA's position is they haven't made any final decision.
But it could be. I'm just trying to understand what could be part, because one way of reading the April letter is that for all the things that Chevron cares about, it agreed. And then it says, oh, but by the way, there could be other sources at the site, which is very vague. And so what I want to know is, are there any sources at the site that could actually, I mean, I know you're not, I'm not asking you to make a final determination, but just to explain to us, is there a theory that's tenable under which those would actually be Chevron's responsibility and therefore of concern?
So I also want to clarify one thing in answering this question, and that is in the April letter, we were not, EPA was not speaking simply to Chevron's obligations, but about the overall need for OCS permits at the site. So well, I think what we, as made clear, it wasn't necessarily the agency was trying to draw a distinction between, you know, Chevron's obligation as the owner of the platform may go away, but the derrick barge owner may have some sort of obligation under the Clean Air Act. It was simply the agency saying, we don't know exactly what OCS obligations apply without a more detailed understanding. I think to give a little bit more of a clear factual scenario, you know, the derrick barge, city block with a crane on it, sidles up to an offshore platform and attaches to the platform itself and is then attached to the seabed through the platform. Those emissions from running the giant crane on the derrick barge are attributed to the OCS source. Under Chevron's reading, the minute that the platform itself no longer has an emission, those emissions from the crane on the barge attached to the platform sort of vanish in terms of a regulatory.
So one thing I'm not quite following is that there's two under 55.2, which we've been focused on, there's two subparts that seem potentially relevant. One of them is where the vessel is permanently attached to the seabed and then is used for certain processes. And the second is when it's physically attached to the OCS facility.
Yes.
The second one is the one that you've been talking about, the city block that attaches itself to the facility. But if you look at the April letter, that one is never even invoked. Maybe I'm not reading.
Oh, in terms of, I think that goes to the question of what is the OCS facility. Again, so I think one.
But I guess what I'm saying is that in the April letter, so if you look at Joint Appendix 129, Joint Appendix 129 specifically talks about the need for additional facts to understand the scenario. And then it going from 128 to 129, however, in this situation, the applicability of OCS permitting also depends on whether equipment or facilities brought to the site, et cetera, et cetera. And then at the end of that paragraph at the top of 129, it specifically, the letter specifically invokes the first part of 55.2, permanently or temporarily attached to the seabed and erected thereon and used for the purpose of exploring, developing, or producing resources therefrom. And on that language, the question in my mind is, even if it permanently attaches to the seabed, in decommissioning, is it used for the purpose of exploring, developing, or producing resources therefrom? It doesn't seem obvious that it would be. But you've been talking about the second part of 55.2, where it attaches to the platform, not to the seabed. And I just don't see that anywhere in the letter.
It wasn't expressly discussed in the letter, but I think that I do want to know, we also don't know whether or not the derrick barge may directly attach to the sea. There's just a lot we don't know factually.
Yeah, on that part of it, I get, but on the part of it attaching to the platform.
I think the point was the agency was saying, we need to know more about what's actually happening to figure out how we're going to apply these regulations in these circumstances.
And this is something that hasn't been, I gather this is just arising. These platforms have been out there since sort of 60s to the 80s, and they're only now coming to the end of their useful life.
I think in general, that's correct. And that's why this BOEM report, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management report, was published as sort of the end of the life cycle of a lot of facilities. As you'll note, this is a very small record for many of the agency cases you all hear. And, you know, there's just not any other sort of guidance out there about these provisions. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I do want to briefly touch on.
Can I just follow up on my question just for a second? And now we'll give you time to make the additional point. You think that the 55.2, the second part of 55.2, is in fact in play here, even though the April letter specifically talks about the first part and then ends that paragraph by saying EPA's conclusion in the January letter that the circumstances presented did not suggest these criteria would be met. Lack sufficient foundation. That I get on the first part, but on the second part, it's just not even mentioned. What you're telling us is that in fact is in play.
I want to be clear. I'm not implying that there's a sort of hidden reference to 55, the second provision that you're talking about in the letter. I think my point is the purpose of the letter. And I think it makes this clear is they need to understand the factual predicate in order to apply the legal requirements to the facts.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to pin you down or be too technical or anything. Yeah. I'm just wanting to know, just as a general matter, does the letter in saying we need to know additional stuff to figure out what's really going on? Do you understand the letter to be including the scenario under the second part of 55.2, even though it's not specifically referenced there?
I don't read the letters specifically including that second, but I bring it up here.
You don't read it to foreclose it either.
Correct. And just briefly, I do want to touch on the new.
We will give you time for that. But what is a permit applicability determination? That's what Chevron sought, and I just couldn't find anything on whether this is a formal inquiry established in any rules or any guidance or just kind of a response to a letter. And I'm thinking about this in particular, you know, when we think about PAWQ and an approved jurisdictional determination, is it like that? Is it not like that? And why?
So there is no process. In other provisions of the Clean Air Act and other provisions of many environmental statutes, such as the jurisdictional determination is lost. There is a clear permit applicability determination process that's set forth either through formal regulations or informal guidance. Nothing like that exists here. And in fact, to the extent, you know, the January letter is the only instance that we are aware of anything close to a permit applicability determination in the context of the OCS permitting program. And so this is just not something the agency does. And in the April letter, you know, the agency, I think, clearly said, you know, we erred in trying to make this determination in the first instance rather than directing you to the permitting agency.
And just a couple more things in terms of process. Is it your view, and I ask these same questions to Ms. Stetson, that Chevron would not have needed to go to Ventura County for approval of its abandonment? There's no process with Ventura County to abandon the existing permit.
I don't know. Okay. And I would say because that is a question of state law. I mean, I will say that if Chevron is confident that, you know, at that moment that the last generator leaves a platform, it's not subject to the stationary provisions of the Clean Air Act, it's in the clear, right? I mean, they don't have to do anything because
subject to whatever jeopardy for enforcement
absolutely.
Action. And is it your understanding that in following the issuance of the January letter, had the April letter never come along, that Chevron would have nonetheless gone to Ventura armed with that fantastic letter and had to seek a determination on its decommissioning plans, or maybe not?
I don't know. You know, I certainly know that, you know, the letter was not directed to Ventura County. You know, nothing in the letter indicated that the agency couldn't change its position. And also, you know, to be frank, I mean, maybe they were right, maybe they were wrong in the letter. You know, EPA and regulated parties can disagree or have different interpretations all the time. You know, to some extent, it's only when we have formal action taken that those questions are resolved. And I think on that point, you know, the merits question that Ms. Stetson put before this court at the very beginning is simply not properly before the court because it hasn't been answered in any concrete way by either agency, either Ventura County or EPA. And I
couldn't find it, but is there any kind of, I mean, how much autonomy does Ventura County have to apply or, I guess, interpret the rules? My reading is under the delegation agreement, it isn't an interpreter, it's an applier, an enforcer.
Yes. And
so just, again, procedurally, if Ventura County were to require a permit that Chevron thinks is in error, what happens? Who comes to EPA?
So this is certainly Ventura County does not have the ability to issue an interpretive regulation like EPA would have about the OCS provision. But the very nature of issuing permits, applying fact to law, entails making interpretations of the OCS provision, the Clean Air Act, and the regulations. And so they do have interpretive authority in the context of permitting or not permitting or bringing enforcement actions that they were expressly delegated to do. You know, and you are correct that the delegation agreement specifically requires the Ventura County to discuss with EPA any issues of interpretation of the act that arise. And so under the sort of normal course, or at least the course set out in the delegation agreement, one would expect that, you know, if and when Chevron goes to Ventura County regarding their reading of the act and how it applies to their particular facilities, Ventura County may agree or disagree. And depending on the nature of that disagreement, it could be EPA could be brought in to discuss the interpretive issues.
You reference application of law to fact, and that is also germane to the venue question. And I know you wanted to speak briefly to the venue question. And it seems to me that one of the major aspects of the venue question is when you have an exercise of statutory interpretation that could apply more broadly than the particular facts at hand, but it arises in the context of particular facts. Does that exercise of statutory interpretation render the decisional document a nationally applicable document, or is it still regionally applicable?
No, it does not render it a nationally applicable document. And I would wholeheartedly agree with Judge Tatel's review of the Sierra Club decision involving the Hunter Power Plant, which we believe is rather directly on point. And ultimately, I think what, you know, and this has been addressed in many of this court's venue decisions, but it goes to the nature of the agency's action is what is being looked at to determine whether it's nationally applicable, not the reasoning behind it. And I guess to go to a point that Ms. Stetson made, you know, if EPA, you know, were to disapprove a change to a power plant and Wisconsin for a reason that it would disapprove a change to any power plant nationally, that doesn't make it a national issue subject to review in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals if the action being taken is specific to that Wisconsin power plant. If, on the other hand, the EPA were to promulgate a rule saying in this circumstance that any power plant throughout the country, you know, these are the change to a power plant may not be approved, that would be national. It may be the same legal issue, but we look at the action being challenged, not sort of the underlying legal issues in the case. And again, I think the Sierra Club case.
Or although one quick follow-up. If there is a nationally applicable legal issue in a decision that applies to particular facts in a particular locality, then as Judge Tatel mentioned earlier, the agency can certify.
Absolutely.
That, so in those situations, there is a way in which that it would come here if the agency deems it to be nationally applicable in that way, if there's an embedded legal determination that's nationally applicable.
Absolutely. And that's an option the agency has and obviously did not.
Other than your best interpretation of the statute here, is there some other reason as to why EPA prefers to have this case in the Ninth Circuit than here?
No, I mean it's simply, you know, this is an action relating to.
You're just looking at the statute. You're not telling us there's some underlying EPA policy that you prefer a case like this in the. You're happy to have it decided either court. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So I guess, and I don't know if this is where you're going, Your Honor. I think this court is perfectly capable of addressing the threshold jurisdictional issues of final agency action. Before venue, or it could do it the other way around. And so we're happy to have this court decide in the first instance that this is not properly reviewable at all. But
that would be if we actually thought, as you do, that venue is proper in the Ninth Circuit, that would be a little odd, wouldn't it? For us, I mean, Congress has expressed its desire. It's developed a scheme here. It's thought this through. And if we think, and I'm not saying what I think here, but if we think the case belongs in the Ninth Circuit, wouldn't it be odd for us to say, well, we're going to go ahead and decide the final agency action question first? Why would we do that?
Well, as I've, first I note that I've, you know, the statute makes clear that it's only final actions that are subject to review at all.
Well, that's my question. Why would we, if we didn't think it venue was proper here, why would we decide that?
I think because this court in its prior decisions, and unfortunately I cannot name one off the top of my head, has largely said that when you have different sort of threshold issues that can decide a case, the court is generally.
Well, so I mean, one way to ask the question is this. Suppose we thought that it is final agency action. Then wouldn't it seem a little bit odd to say it's final agency action, now go to the Ninth Circuit to litigate the rest of the case?
That's a fair point.
I mean, it's one thing if we say there's not final agency action, then I take the point that then we're dismissing it either way and we could choose. But the whole point of not deciding the final agency action question is to not reach a resolution of it, which would leave open the possibility that we think it is. And if we think that it is, then saying, but by the then it goes to the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit has exclusive venue. Then what do they do with our final agency action conclusion? Because we didn't have venue to render that decision anyway.
That is a fair point. Of course, the counter to that would be if this court has already noted and determined that it's not a final agency action, why would you want to then send it to another court to just review that decision or to make the same decision?
Well, precisely because the statute says that it's supposed to be done there.
And the Ninth Circuit may think otherwise, and they have venues proper there, hypothetically.
So certainly, this court is well empowered to simply look at the venue issue, decide the venue lies in the Ninth Circuit, and address nothing else. Although we would ask that the court, after having heard extensive argument and briefing on the final agency action issue, rule on that issue.
Does either letter, the January letter, the April letter, bind EPA? Does either letter bind Ventura County?
If my colleagues have no additional questions for you, Mr. Dupre.
Thank you.
Ms. Stetson, we'll give you 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I want to make one point about the facts that are at issue here and one point about the permits that are at issue. First of all, the question presented in this case, and this is from EPA's own brief, is whether some decommissioning activities may require an OCS permit, even where the platform itself no longer emits a pollutant. There is nothing hypothetical about that. There is no further factual development needed as to that. The hypotheticals that EPA is talking about in its letter and in its brief have to do with EPA's theory that there are activities that are brought to the site or equipment brought to the site after the point where the platform is simply concrete and metal that itself could confer OCS source on the platforms. And that leads to my second point about the permits. Mr. Dupre said during the course of his argument that the letters below had to do with the overall process, the overall need for OCS permits at the site. That is not what this case is about. What this case is about is whether Chevron needs to continue to hold Title V stationary source permits for its platforms. There is no question that other elements of decommissioning are regulated by the Clean Air Act, by the way, not unregulated by the Clean Air Act. It's simply regulated under the mobile source requirements. There is no question that to the extent OCS source permits are necessary for some other activity or facility at the site, that those permits will be applied for. But the question here is whether Chevron needs to hold these platform permits, whether the platforms themselves are subject to permitting. Judge Pillard, in response to your question about permit applicability determinations, these are quite common. This was not some rogue action by a company and a rogue action by an administrator. If you look at the EPA website, you'll see lists of significant numbers of PADs under, for example, the new source review element of the website. These types of permit applicability determinations are made precisely because EPA is, as the federal supervisory authority over Ventura County, responsible for interpreting the statute. This is not, Judge Blair.
I was just going to ask the same thing I asked Mr. Dupre. Are they binding on EPA? Are they binding on you? Are they binding on Ventura? And how do we know that?
I think they are binding on us under the same way that the Bennett versus Spear case asks the question, whether they're binding. They're binding on us because as of January, I think this goes to a question Judge Tatel asked Mr. Dupre as well. As of January, the answer to the question, is a concrete and metal platform an OCS source, was no. As of April, the answer to that same question was maybe. Go to Ventura County, take 12 to 18 months, and you'll find out. So the difference between, for Chevron, the difference between that is that as of January, Chevron had a safe harbor from stationary source regulation after the point, again, where the platforms have reached the point where they can't emit anymore. As of April, that question now has been an open question. So what was closed in January was reopened in April for decision by Ventura County. So as far as EPA is concerned, EPA has issued its final decision on whether, even if a platform can no longer emit, decommissioning might still be subject to Title V. And the answer from EPA is maybe, go find out. And that, under Bennett versus Spear, creates consequences for us. Just a couple more points, if I could, on venue. The difference, again, between this case and the other venue cases in this circuit, and I would encourage you to look at each of them, because each of them, including Sierra Club, including the producers of renewables case, including Madison Gas from the Seventh Circuit, each of those have to do with elements that were particular to the site. And each of them had to do, as Mr. Dupre just hypothesized, of either an approval of a permit or a disapproval of a change to that particular site. Here, in contrast, we are talking about a decision that EPA made in January of last year that once a platform reaches a particular point in time where it no longer emits, it need not seek a permit. And that kind of dynamic, I think, is much different. And that kind of ruling is nationally applicable to any permit that reached that, any platform that reaches that. There are no further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. We'll take this case under submission.